There are certain eternal truths to being back here in New Jersey. By the way, my father is out and about right now, Merrick. I don't know if he's going to be able to hop on before you ask.
No, that's a drag.
One of those eternal truths, sir, is the fact that my parents' microwave will forever smell of bacon. It's just pretty much how it's going to be.
Is that because of you, or is that because of how much the Wyszynski family loves bacon? That
they love bacon.
Will
they
forever
they
have,
eat a lot of bacon, and they cook it in the microwave, which I'm against, frankly. I'm a pan guy, pan drippings guy, but or oven. But they've cooked so much bacon in the microwave that, like, I am right now drinking bacon coffee. My daughter before ate bacon mac and cheese, which probably tasted pretty good. I'm sure my mother drinks bacon tea from boiling in the water and the whole thing. It's just, like, ingrained. It's, like, permeated every crack and crease in that plastic.
Do you put – I mean, are you one of these pro-bacon guys to the point where you'll put bacon bits on your toothbrush before brushing your teeth?
No.
You sort of sprinkle it in there like a Hawaiian donut on your toothpaste?
I actually don't like bacon bits, and that tracks back to when I was a kid. I was in I think it was elementary school one day. And, you know, I'm a fan of sandwiches, as most Americans are. So I decided to get myself an egg salad sandwich. My mom makes a killer egg salad. I was very excited to have egg salad for lunch from the school. And I bit into it, and my little baby Greg tooth got all banged up because there were bacon bits inside of the egg salad. Which, you know, back when I was in elementary school was something you can get away with. Like, not so much today. Can you imagine elementary school is just mandating bacon inside of products and not telling parents that their kids are ingesting it?
Outrage.
But, yeah, I hurt my tooth on it. It was so tough and hard that it put me off of bacon bits. So I'm not actually a bacon bits guy. The only time we'll put bacon on a salad if it's that sort of floppy bacon bits thing versus the cement like bacon bits.
So you have no time for hard bacon. It's got to be soft and chewy bacon, essentially, is what
because I like crisp bacon like otherwise, but the bacon bit itself, is sort of a prefab bacon, I'm not a fan of.
Where are you at with pea meal bacon, Canadian back bacon?
Oh, I love it. Oh, I love it, sir. No worries on that.
Then you know what?
Our countries can come together on that. Yeah.
Okay, next time you're in town. I will take you somewhere to the St. Lawrence Market, which is on Front Street, not too far from your favorite Toronto bar. We walk down the stairs and you drink a lot of beer. What's the name of that place, by the way, on Front Street?
Say what?
Yeah.
But isn't the market also near my favorite Toronto hotel, the Weston Harbor Castle too, or no?
You got to walk up the street. It's not that far. You're right. It's not that far. It's a quick little walk. And they have one place there that when I was a carnivore, I used to devour back bacon sandwiches there. They have the finest in the world. I will take you there and watch you eat one of those things.
Listen, I don't want you to ever put that poison back in your body, but I have thought once in a while, like, what if we got so drunk one night, like just so lit, just so rip-roaring shit-ass drunk that, like, would I walk into your hotel room the next morning and just see you surrounded by, like, cheeseburger wrappers, a prime rib from like room service draped across your chest. Like, I just wonder if
there'd
be a meat orgy. Yeah.
No. I've never stepped outside. I've you know, when there's nothing around, I'll just not eat. But no, I've never gone over to the dark side.
Because when you drink, everybody's got that Mr. Hyde that comes out when they drink. For me, it's the desire to get naked but never getting naked. I always have sort of, I guess, a failsafe to make sure I don't. There was one time I had moonshine in the Outer Banks, and I nearly stripped naked and ran up and down a pier and jumped in the water because that's the power of moonshine. That's sort of the Mr. Hyde that comes out in me. It's like I morph into Jason Segel or something all of a sudden. But you, I always hoped that for you it was like an orgy of meat would be your Mr. Hyde that comes out.
No, just like you find me like passed out on my floor with a bunch of like Slim Jim wrappers all around me. Yeah,
and then
can happen.
You look at me with meat all on your face and just like, I snapped into it. I snapped into it bad, man.
I don't know what happened, man. No, you know what it is for me? I don't think I can get that drunk because I sort of exist and you know this because between being a parent and working, I kind of exist in this space where I'm constantly in need of getting more sleep. So I lead a pretty active life. I like to be up early with the kids. I like to work out. I kind of exist in this sort of state of tiredness, and I don't give my body enough rest. And I find that when I get to the point where I'm starting to get lit, It's like, all right, it's time to go to sleep now. Jeffy's going to go take himself up to bed. So I don't think I have actually the capacity to get that lit anymore. I just go to bed.
Yeah, I had one of those nights. I had one of those nights last night where I drove up here to Jersey, and it took like 6 hours. It was raining. There was traffic. I get in. She wakes up. She's up until freaking 2 running around the house. So I actually went to bed at like 4:30 last night because I just couldn't get to sleep.
Oh.
Wound up watching a horror movie with and you'll not get the reference, but many in the audience will. Stephen from Laguna Beach was on the Showtime horror movie I was watching. So it was it was a long night. I imagine you had a long night too. For those who are joining us today and maybe didn't hear the show yesterday or have been living under a rock or on Mars or somewhere. Yeah, Rogers owns the NHL now in Canada, and for the next 12 years, and Jeff Merrick, our good radio buddy, will be a direct beneficiary of all of this windfall. How was yesterday? What was the most surreal moment for you yesterday? Please tell the listeners what your day was like.
The most surreal moment was actually being woken up by my boss, Scott Woodgate, who explained to me that, A, I needed to get up, have a shower, drag a razor across my face, and get into the studio because I need to be on set for 11 o'clock for this big announcement. As he went over the particular of the deal, I was talking to him. I was like, yeah, I heard about this last night. You know, it's a partnership, the deal with the CBC and all that. He said, no, dude, it's even bigger than that. And as he ran that down, my jaw continued to drop lower and lower until it finally hit the floor. And you know what? I'll tell you what, Wish, it still hasn't even sunk in for me yet. Like the sort of enormity of this. Yesterday was a forest for the trees, right? I didn't spend, I spent 15 minutes on our podcast, but I didn't spend any time online. I didn't spend much time on Twitter at all because it was, you know, get on set to throw to the press conference. I had to fill in for Darren for Hockey Central at noon since he was hosting the presser with the commissioner and Nadir and Keith Pelly. And then from there, the afternoon was full of doing stand-up interviews with either Daly or John Collins or media columnists as well, Scott Moore, Keith Pelly, all the primaries who ended up putting the deal together. And then we had to tape a one-hour standalone special that aired 7 to 8 yesterday. And then, then I had to do Hockey Central Tonight, which we thankfully taped, me and Doug McLean and Brian Lawton. And then I went to Boston Pizza in Stouffville and had a beer and then came home and went to bed.
Aww.
That was my day. It was a whirlwind. It was crazy. I lost sort of all perspective on the thing because when you're right beside it and you're right next to it and you're in the middle of it, you get a sense of how big it is and you understand it, but it's one of those things where you need to be an outsider to really understand it initially, like right away. Like you had a greater perspective on it yesterday, I'm positive, than I did. Like you're able to look at it from a number of different venues. Since I was in the middle of it having to do interviews and read up on it as quickly as possible to get caught up to speed so I can talk to people like Bill Daly about it or Nadir Muhammad about it or Keith Pelly about it, you kind of lose sight of what it actually is. So I spent last night when I came home a little bit reading about it online and all the memos we got from Sportsnet, and then the better part of this morning talking to people and texting people back that I had to ignore yesterday, and I still haven't caught up. And thank you, by the way, to everyone who sent in the congratulations notes and, you know, a lot of positivity coming our way, and we really do appreciate it. But I'm still kind of catching up from what was easily the most overwhelming work day I've ever had in my life. And that includes the last day of the lockout, which I never thought I'd go through a scenario more bizarre or surreal at work. But guess again, Jeffy, not exactly a year, not even a year later, I went through something even more bizarre, and that was yesterday. Like, it's one of those things, Wish, where every person you talk to, the first thing out of your mouth is, oh my God. Right? And almost turning into, like, as far as a broadcaster goes, I'm not sure where hockey fans are on this. I'm sure it's similar. It's almost turned into one of those, where were you when you heard the news moments? Like, where were you, Wish, when you heard the news of this $5.2 billion 12-year deal with Rogers and the NHL?
I'll tell you exactly where I was. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here. I won't tell you what we're talking about, but I was having a direct message conversation with James Duffy. And at one point, Duffy said, check Twitter. Which was odd because we were on Twitter, but then he says, check Twitter. So I checked Twitter. And like 30 seconds ago, Bob McKenzie drops the bomb. Like that was it. I was conversing with James Duffy and then McKenzie dropped the bomb. It was insane. It was an insane time and seeing that story blow up and then all the details coming in. I don't know what to ask you about this. Like we talked about it yesterday, you know, at the top of the show, but like, I just feel like you're in a place where you can't really get into the details.
Well, I don't know what it means.
Or,
Yeah. Because I don't know any details. Like, I don't know what this is going to mean. It's funny. I was just talking to PJ Stock before the podcast, and, you know, no one there on air behind the scenes knows what ultimately this is going to mean. I don't know what this is going
to
mean.
Wait, when you were talking to PJ Stock, were you like, you're like, hey, PJ, how does your chair feel? Is it comfortable? I mean, am I going to fit right in it, or?
No, You know that dressing room you used to have? Yeah, I'm going to be needing that. Yeah, so if you could just tidy it up, that'd be great. Thanks, Peach. Yeah, no one really knows what this means. I mean, we got some hints, some ideas yesterday from Scott Moore and Keith Pelley about the creation of this, you know, standalone department with probably its own, you know, geographical space somewhere in the GTA. It's the way that I look at it is, and what it sounds like to me is, you're creating what we could best sort of compare to as an Olympic division within Sportsnet that, mm-hmm. Doesn't just work, for the 3 weeks that the Olympics is on, but rather, functions for 12 years. That's kind of like, because I've worked Olympics before in 2008. You know what it's like to work in Olympics. You have your Olympic division, you have your IBC, and mm-hmm. that's where you report and get your assignments and off you are for the day. It kind of sounds like that's the best thing I can compare it to. It's kind of like creating that Olympic division, but it's Olympic division for 12 years. And listen, man, like, Rodgers has to hit the ground running on this one. Like, it's like, oh, the deal doesn't start until next year, but that comes really fast.
Yeah.
You know, when you consider how much hockey, like just the games, for example, I mean, forget all the ancillary stuff and the support properties, or I guess they're called, shoulder programming or shoulder properties, just the games itself, that's a ton of work. When you consider that, that's it for regional blackouts, for most games, three nights of national broadcast, both with us and a sublicense with TVA and CBC. That is a ton of work, and that is a nightmare to organize. And you know who I feel bad for? Schedule makers. I don't want to program this beast. I don't want to be the guy that has to sit there and, marry broadcasters and producers and, trucks, to the various games. That's a nightmare. That's a tough scheduling assignment. Thankfully, that ain't my job.
Yeah.
I don't want that gig. Sure. But I don't know. Like, I you can ask anything you want, and you can tweet in for asking me anything. You tweet in any question you want. Like, I'm on this podcast. I'm wide open about anything. But I don't have answers.
A couple people were asking off the top here. Matt Genova writes in, I have a question for Jeff. Has he dove into Rogers' money pit Scrooge McDuck style yet, or do Kiprios and Millard keep butting into the front of the line? That's his question.
And Doug McLean too, and Doug McLean as well. I'm low. The money I make, Greg, is it's a modest fee. It makes noise in my pockets. It's not that long, quiet green that Nikki has.
Chris McElwain, which TSN member are you most looking forward to joining Sportsnet?
I don't think any come over. I don't. I honestly,
really?
Like, well, they'll still have a hockey department. Yeah. I can't see TSN letting go of anybody. Are you kidding? That's a
you
all-star team staff.
You think they'll still be all hands on deck for hockey? Like, you don't think they're going to downscale with not having the rights?
They still have a lot of properties. I mean, they still have, as far as hockey goes, they still have an affiliation, an association, a partnership with Hockey Canada. So with that goes, the World Junior Hockey Championships. That goes all of the Hockey Canada properties for both men and women. I would assume they'll bid on, I mean, they have Winnipeg Jets games regionally. They have Montreal regionally. I would imagine if Ottawa comes up for bid, that they would aggressively go after that as well. It's just, speculation. Maybe they go after the CHL package. I don't know, but I can't see them throwing in the towel on hockey. There's not a chance.
As a broadcaster
in Canada, you can't do it. You can't.
No, I know you can't go. You can't just toss it away. You can't toss it aside like ESPN, losing the hockey rights and then putting hockey in the back of the back closet. It makes me happy that you say that, because the vibe I get from all those guys was they were seriously worried that they were going to be on their ass, And some of them might be, but overall, it sounds like you don't think so, no?
I don't think so. There's no way. I talked to some TSN people, just over text yesterday, and I don't get the sense that they're throwing in the towel on hockey. You can't do that.
Makes me happy.
You can't do that in Canada. You just can't.
Ben Glissman writes in, my question for Jeff, hey man, can I get a loan? # Moneybags Merrick.
I told you, man. You can hear me coming down the street because of the nickels and dimes in my pocket. It's the long, quiet green that you want. You're knocking on the wrong door.
It's a weird deal. Like, it's almost like people feel like you're part of some investment firm, where like the firm makes a gets a big contract and like all the employees suddenly get a gigantic bonus check. It's not, the Rogers
not like
bought the NHL. It's not the other way around. The NHL didn't give Rogers $4.9 billion.
If anything, right now, it's the worst time to ask for a raise or to redo a contract. It's like, guy, we just spent $5 billion. I don't know that we have much money left here, in the envelopes for you, bud. Sorry. We have, you know, we have some guaranteed work for you. I don't know. We have more nickels and dimes for
you. Yeah. Everybody has it really backwards. It's like, no.
Totally.
Like, and you know, Merrick's going to have to give them money. Merrick actually came from a bake sale in front of the Rogers Communication headquarters to raise funds to pay the NHL contract.
It was actually a car wash, and I look great in a polka dot bikini.
Cameron Boucher writes in, question for Merrick. Yesterday your backyard rink was 20 by 36. Have you since upgraded to an Olympic size rink with a giant Sportsnet logo at center ice?
And two Zambonis, thank you very much, to make sure the floods are quicker. And heated benches as well, yes, that would be nice. And underground refrigeration.
Double bony.
System.
Yeah, double bony. Whoa.
You gotta flood that sucker fast, yo. Double bony.
All of these things, by the way, are coming from Going Postal today, which obviously you can chime in. PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com, at WishesKHF Merrick on Twitter. Ask us anything. That is our mailbag segment that will come up later in the show as well. It was a fun day yesterday. And again, like I said in the show, bummed about lack of competition, bummed about some of the TSN guys maybe being out and about. But, overall, it's surreal. Again, I find it odd that once again, the National Hockey League becomes the exception to the rule when it comes to sports properties. Major League Baseball, the National Basketball Association, and especially the National Football League all have multiple networks. Now, yes. I'm not just talking about USA Canada. I'm talking about within the states. They're all on multiple networks. And I just find it strange. It is a little weird that the NHL is so enamored with the monolithic one network setup. And I know that Rogers is going to farm this thing out to CBC and to the French
TVA.
Station and what have you.
TVA.
But it's at the end of the day, it's casting your lot with Rogers in Canada, with NBC in the States, and no one else gets a taste. It's kind of weird. It's kind of running counter to everything else that's been done in sports properties.
Yeah, and I think that's more than anything else the power of the check, right? That's the power of the $5 billion. It's funny. Nick was talking. Kiprios was talking about this on primetime yesterday with McCown and Cox. He thinks that Bell would have matched the number, would have matched the money. Hmm. Do you think so? Because I ask legitimately. I don't know if they would have, like, if the NHL would have gone back and said, we have 5.2 over here. Do we hear 5.3? If they
well,
would
like.
Have.
Like I said yesterday, I think Rogers, and again, the caveat, dude on the other side of the microphone works for him. I kind of work for him and have worked for them. I think that their digital properties and their digital side of things is so much far ahead of where Bell's is that it really behooves for what the NHL is trying to accomplish in the next 12 years, I think casting your lot with Rogers was a smarter decision, to be honest with you. Did TSN do a marvelous job covering the league? Of course they did. There's no question about that. And they innovated, and they had great talent on air, and everything looked really pretty and stuff. And that's a loss. I mean, yeah, it's funny. I did my XM hit earlier today with Boomer, and he was asking me, he's like, do U.S. fans care about all this stuff? I'm like, yeah, we do, because, like, here's the thing, right? All of the inside info, all of the stuff that we like to bandy about, write on blogs, bitch about on Twitter, what have you, it's coming from TSN or Sportsnet or Elliot Friedman or, occasionally from ESPN, if LeBron's right in there instead of doing stuff for TSN. But essentially, Sportsnet and TSN are our fire hose for NHL information here in the States, because NBC doesn't employ an insider. They don't have a Drager or a McKenzie. They have analysts. So they don't have a news-gathering apparatus there for hockey at NBC.
But it's different coverage. It shouldn't be treated as if that is ending, because it's not. Right? Like,
no, that's what, like, I'm saying. That's why we care. Like, we care about whether or not all – like, I had some guy saying, I guess I can unfollow McKenzie and Drager. I'm like, don't you dare do that. Yeah, exactly.
Why would you do that?
We in the States care about the quality of coverage in Canada because, you know, as much as we're happy with the coverage in the States expanding through blogs like mine, through NBC's contract, through other sites stepping up and doing hockey, I mean, essentially, we look to Canada for a lot of these things, for a lot of opinions, for a lot of breaking news, for trade deadline coverage and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, like, the idea that Rogers has all of the chips right now for national rights, it does affect things. It does shift the landscape, and it does affect coverage. Listen, if you're a casual hockey fan and you're not following McKenzie and Dreger on Twitter, what are you doing, right?
Yeah.
All of this stuff affects us, too, in the States.
How big, as far as the TV deal goes, though, like personnel aside and you know, pipeline for information aside, does it really resonate with a U.S. hockey fan? The fact that, you know, it's all under the same tent now with Rogers' tent poles? Doesn't really matter, does it?
From the business side of things?
From the hockey side of things, it clearly does, because now, you know, every NHL team has more money to spend, and the salary cap goes up, and effectively you've washed away the effects of the lockout last year. General managers and team presidents and owners are certainly thrilled about this, more money to spend and or more money to save, at least in the short term. I mean, we all understand that and what the ramifications are, but as far as the broadcast goes, it doesn't really matter.
There's two different aspects of this. There's the sports business side of things, right? And then there's the hockey business side of things. And from the hockey business side of things, we all know what this means, right? Like, the cap's going up, the floor's going up, and we are going to lose another season. Let's just be honest here. The cap is going to go up so high because it's tied to HRR. The floor is going to go up so high because it's tied to HRR that they're going to have to reinvent the system again at the next work stoppage. And then all the owners are going to be, blah, 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 we're spending so much on player salaries, we must curb the scourge of play, and we're going to lose another season.
But
I mean, that's what's going to happen.
But regardless of this deal, that was going to happen anyway. You can make the argument maybe this accelerates it.
Well, it accelerates the 5 or 6% growth, that's going to sustain that growth, is the thing. It's not going to wane.
But this isn't a new revelation based on the Rogers deal with the NHL. That was going to happen anyway because, you know, if you're concerned about the disparity between, you know, rich teams and poor teams, I don't think the CBA addressed it. The CBA that was put to bed last January addressed it outside of just sort of put a Band-Aid on it for a couple of years. Right? Because it's headed that way anyhow. So, you know, Florida is going to have a hard time competing. All the smaller market teams will have a hard time competing because that CBA, correct me if I'm wrong here, folks, if you're that concerned about the haves and the have-nots and that disparity between the two, I don't think that CBA addressed it in any profound long-term way.
I know why you're saying this, right? You're saying this because, you know, essentially, it's Rogers' fault we're going to lose the season. And you feel like Dr. Oppenheimer right now. You feel like you've invented the atom bomb. You don't know how to deal with it yet. You don't know how to process it yet. And that's fine. I mean, we'll come around to blame all you guys, and we'll storm Rogers Communications HQ with torches. You'll be holed up there with a thing of broccoli, clutching a gun and hoping no one finds you. I understand that. But essentially, we're going to lose the season because of Rogers.
You know, one of my favorite things to watch on the internet is it's Quick Link. You mentioned Oppenheimer. There's that great moment that no one should really have to go to when you realize that, you know, something you did for the good of quote unquote mankind has turned into a horribly destructive thing. And he quotes the Bhagavad Gita and he says, "In one of the most haunting things you'll find on the internet, I have become death." Let me see if I can find it.
Right,
have you seen
that
clip? Have you seen that? It's haunting.
Yeah.
I have become death. Hang on. Now I want to watch it.
Anyways, from the sports business side of things, you know, I think there are some of us that are wonks about it, you know, that are interested in seeing how the landscape changes, that are interested to see how the trickle down of talent will come out, whether guys go to Sportsnet or stay at TSN or come down to NBC. Like, there are kind of, you know, hockey geeks from that perspective that are media geeks, right? And I would be, whether or not I was in the media or not. But you're right. I mean, overall, I don't think Americans appreciate the seismic shift that's occurred in Canadian media in the last 48 hours. If that's what you're asking.
Hang on. I want everyone to hear this. Hold on a second. This is haunting. This is Robert Oppenheimer, I think in New Mexico, 1945. Hang on. Oh, man, that kills me every single time I watch that.
Yeah.
That's after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and he really brings it all back to himself. Holy smokes. And I got goosebumps. This is weird. Every time I watch that, watching this man, like, sob, compare his work to Vishnu in the Bhagavad Gita. Oh, man, that's awesome.
When Rogers forces the next work stoppage and costs us a season, are you gonna mimic that speech? Is that working?
Now I am become death, Greg Wyszynski, the destroyer of worlds.
It reminded me of I believe it was Vishnovsky, Lubomir.
Not Vishnu, it was Vishnovsky.
Who said, I have become an ex-islander, a destroyer of teams.
The Bhagavad Irat. The destroyer of worlds.
All right, we've taken that to its logical conclusion. Coming up on the show today, an author, sir, a learned man.
Yeah, man.
A man who puts his fingers in the keyboard and creates some magic. His name is Rob Del Mundo, and he's going to join us to talk about his book, The Best, Worst, and Biggest NHL Trades.
Yeah,
so no fourth line center for a seventh round pick, sir. That's a small trade.
No, sir.
That shit ain't going to fly in this book. Best, worst, biggest. That's what we're doing, man.
Love it.
That's right. And with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Ladies and gentlemen, this tag team match of Mid-South Wrestling is one fall with a 10-minute time limit.
From Ontario, Canada.
Jeff Merrick of Sports.
From New Jersey.
Greg Wyszynski of Yahoo Sports. Debate hockey. Pop culture. And more hockey. Merrick versus Wyszynski.
Wow.
Coast to coast. Wow.
I love it. And then, of course, now imagining Jim Cornette leading us to the ring as the Midnight Express theme plays in the background.
That's right. Bring it to
Mike
the practice,
D. Please, Mike D joins us. Mike D says, Wyszynski's overstated the case. Dreger and McKenzie will still be insiders on Twitter. And that's all, I guess it's supposed to be American fans care about. I assume that's the case. I mean, right?
Let's pick it up in a second because our guest has been standing by for like 5 minutes now.
Let's bring him on, sir. You do the intro.
Robert Oppenheimer. Okay. The book is called The Best, Worst, and Biggest NHL Trades of All Time. And who doesn't love a trade? Trade deadline day, always one of the most sacred days on the hockey calendar. New offering from Rob Del Mundo and Andrew Podneeks. Rob Del Mundo joining us on the podcast. Thanks for putting up with us, by the way, as you waited on hold there, Rob. How you been, buddy?
Not too bad. Yourself. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Doing good.
Rob was my old seatmate at the Air Canada Center when I was working at AM 640. We had our seats together in Popcorn Press Row. So Rob's a good dude, and no surprise, he's put together this amazing offering. Where's the genesis of this one? Like, why just like one day, you know, Rob Del Mundo comes home from the Leaf game and says to himself, you know what, I'm gonna write a book about trades. Like, how did this one come about?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I can't take the credit for the genesis. That's all Andrew Podnick's renowned hockey author. He's done 80 of these things. And we were actually covering the Women's World Championships back in April in Ottawa, and our laptops were positioned next to each other, and you know, we just caught up. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years, and then after the tournament was over, he messaged me about a couple of days later and says he had this great idea for a book, and lo and behold, it just took off from there. He had about 50 or 60 trades that we started doing the research on, and then we wrote it up. So thanks for the props, but the genesis, that's all Andrew's idea. But we certainly had a lot of fun putting it together.
For those who don't aren't familiar with the book, is this a ranking or a chronicling?
It's a chronological order. So we go from 1930 to 2007. And we took that period and we narrowed it down to 58 NHL trades, and we start right in 1930 with King Clancy trade from Ottawa to Toronto, sewed up in 2007 with Ryan Smith going to the New York Islanders, and in between it's just a stroll through memory lane.
Go ahead, Merrick, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, wasn't Matt Pettinger's like grandfather or great grandfather or some relative involved in that King Clancy deal?
I can't recall off the top of my head. I'd have to dig on that a little bit more. But, certainly Art Pettinger was in there for as part of the Clancy deal and the $35,000. And, it worked out well for the Leafs in terms of them getting King Clancy and the foundation for Maple Leaf Gardens. But, I can't recall if Art is related to Matt somehow.
Let's just cut right to the chase. Yeah. It's all the people listening to the show care about. What's your favorite worst trade of all time?
Worst trade. Geez, that's there's so many to choose from. I mean, one that comes to mind right away is Cam Neely going from Vancouver to Boston. It's just unfortunate Barry Peterson had all those shoulder issues. Otherwise, it seemed like a decent trade at the time. I mean, Peterson was coming off a 100-point season, I think, but it's just the trade that kept on giving for Boston, because not only do they get Cam Neely, you know, ultimate power forward and future Hall of Famer, but that first-round pick turns out to be Glenn Wesley. And you know, solid blue liner for the Bruins for so many years, and then when they trade Wesley to Carolina, they keep getting a whole bunch of more first round picks. I think one of them turned out to be Sergei Samsonov. So it just for Boston, it just kept on giving for them.
You know, as a kid, Rob and Greg knows this, and everyone listens to the podcast. Even though I don't have a specific team that I cheer for. When I was a kid, I was very much a Maple Leafs fan.
Yep.
And the one trade that really ripped my heart out was when Pontian Mlack was decimating the team. Was when Lanny McDonald went from the Toronto Maple Leafs to the Colorado Rockies. Was there, and that was like, it ripped the heart out of Maple Leafs fans all across the city, right, as he had this jihad against his own team. Was there one that did it for you, like growing up as a kid, like, oh my God, I can't believe this guy's not part of the team. I can't believe this guy got traded.
Absolutely, I agree 100% on the Lanny trade, and for sure, I mean, that's just for the consummate Leaf fan of a certain generation, when you watched him score that big overtime game 7 goal in 78, and then, you know, a year later, like 2 days before Christmas Eve, he's off to Colorado. That was in there for sure. And I think that whole dismantling of the Leafs team, because it didn't stop with just Lanny. I mean, it just goes on, you know, 2 months later, although it's not in the book, you know, Tiger Williams gets traded to Vancouver, and then, In 82, a couple of years later, the writing was on the wall for Darryl Sittler. I mean, eventually, and we did write that particular one up in 1982 when Darryl Sittler goes off to Philadelphia for three spare parts, no disrespect to Ken Strong and Peter Inichek and Rich Costello. But this was, I mean, Darryl Sittler, the face of the Maple Leaf franchise since the 70s. So for him to see that his career, his career in the Leaf uniform and the way that it did, it just ripped the hearts out of Leaf fans of a certain generation. But yeah, it all started with the Lanny trade.
Wouldn't you say there's a different standard for trades that don't involve draft picks, though? I mean, draft picks can be whatever. Like, you know, granted, okay, sometimes you get Tom Curvers for the pick that turned out to be Niedermeyer, then it's a stupid ass trade, because that's obviously going to be a pretty high pick. But sometimes you get these things where you look back and a guy was taken like between 15 and 30, and no one knew he was going to wind up being the player that he was. I prefer for worst trades those ones where it's like player for player or player for players. That's clearly a gigantic miscalculation by the general manager.
Oh, for
so that's
sure.
That's my bag.
Yeah, and if you want to go to the best example, I guess I can bring up from that book. Well, then for player for player, it'd have to be Marcus Naslund for Alex Stoyanov.
yes.
By Pat Quinn. I mean, between Vancouver and Pittsburgh back in '96, I believe it was. So Stoyanov, again, another up and comer, but you know, just had injury problems, but then you never heard from him again. He becomes the answer to a trivia question. You know, Marcus Naslund, you mean, other than the Sedins, he has more points than anyone in Vancouver history, and he becomes that franchise player. So further to your point, yeah, if you're not counting the draft pick aspect, then if you're going for a one-on-one swap, I mean, Naslund for Stoyanov, hands down, has to be up there.
The story of trades is always interesting, how the trades come together and the nature of the conversations and what trades started out as and what they ended up being is always a fascinating journey and one interesting to look at. And one of my favorite sort of sidebar stories, I think Mike Keenan may have told this one on the, on our podcast a couple of years ago, but I remember talking to Mike about it in the strategy room a couple of years ago as well. The Savard for Chelios deal, the way that Mike told it to me is, they wanted to move Savard. Bill Wirtz, the owner, had signed off on it. So Keenan works with Savard to get the deal done. And it's Denny Savard for Chris Chelios. It's one for one at that time. So he goes back. Savard and Keenan shake on it. The deal's done. He goes back to his owner and says, okay, we did the deal, Savard, and we're getting Chris Chelios on the way back. And Bill Wirtz says, nope, we want more. We want a pick. He says, well, I've already made the deal with Savard. I've already done it. He says, nope, too bad. I'm not authorizing you to make this trade, even though they've already made the deal. We need to get something back as well. We need at least a second round pick. So he said, he goes back to Serge and he says, Serge, you know, Wirtz is on me about this deal. It's not gonna happen. He really wants a second round pick coming back the other way. He needs to get something else, not just, you know, Chelios on his own. It needs to be another, piece to this puzzle, piece to this trade. And Mike says, tell you what, if you give me the second round pick, I'll get you a second-round pick in another trade later on. We just can't make it around the same time or it'll look too obvious. But Mike Keenan was fired before him and Savard were actually able to make another trade. So somewhere out there is a second-round pick that was promised to the Montreal Canadiens from the Chicago Blackhawks that never ended up going the other way. What's your favorite story of a trade, Rob, of all the trades you document? Is there one that really resonates with you that, you know, is a fun journey getting there?
In terms of a fun journey, I'd have to say that, I was too young to see Dale McCourt play as a junior player, and but he had that phenomenal junior career. Went for Team Canada and had like that amazing 77 tournament where I think he had 18 or 17 points in 7 games. And
he was a Finn Cup.
Yeah,
Hamilton Finn Cup.
That's right. I think he won a Memorial Cup. And just in terms of the researching the decision that was made when he challenged a free agency because he didn't want to go to L.A. as compensation for Rogge Vachon, but then to read a judge, Robert DiMaggio's ruling, and just to read about how much he was just burned out after everything that he had fought to retain the right to stay in Detroit. I mean, he didn't want to go to L.A. and become like a third-line center behind Dion and Goring, so he eventually he stayed in Detroit, but then by this time he's just alienated everybody who's around him, and then he's just so burned out, and then he just said that. So we wrote up the 1981 trade where he goes to Buffalo, and then he becomes this journeyman, a cup of coffee with the Leafs, and you know what? Who knows how great he may have become, but I mean, I just in researching the trades, I wish I'd been seen Dale McCourt play as a junior because he just sounds like he was just that good. I mean, who knows how great he could have been. Go ahead.
Is this book, I mean, like, do you feel comfortable writing this book because we're never going to see a big trade again because the salary cap and because everybody's on, like, an 8-year contract? Like, it's so hard. You think back to the way things used to be in these blockbusters. I mean, even, like, the Lindros trade. I mean, like, could that even happen today, the Lindros trade, considering all the freight that moved one way to one team, all the salaries that would have been with the other team? I mean, it's amazing to think how much fun it used to be as far as, like, fantasy casting trades or actually having the trades go through. And then today it's like, well, you know, they have $500,000 left under the cap, so they obviously can't trade for Shea Weber. It's a bummer, right?
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to see any of the blockbusters that we saw in the 90s. I mean, I think half the book, just we start at 1980 and just go forward, and we had so much fun between the 80s and the 90s because that's when a lot of that stuff took place. And then, you know, post-salary cap, I mean, I guess you could go with one of the bigger ones was Joe Thornton going from Boston to San Jose, where it's not in the book, but I mean, if we do a version 1B and if we write up the things that happened post-salary cap, I mean, you have to analyze the trade not necessarily on the guys that were exchanged. I mean, no disrespect to Wayne Primeau and Stewart coming the other way, but also in terms of the salary cap room that Boston gets to free up and then go out and signs the Dan O'Chara from Ottawa in 2006.
Right.
So that's where that comes into play. So a lot of if we do another 50 or 60 trades like post salary cap, I mean, you'd have to analyze not only in terms of the players involved, but because of the cap room, as you were just saying.
The last one might be the Heatley trade, to be honest with you, right? Like that might be the last huge multiplayer one. I mean, obviously the Sagan Erickson one's huge, but the Heatley trade might be the last one. It's like package of guys going one way for a dude.
He trades up there. If you want to count maybe Dion Phaneuf as well from between Calgary and Toronto.
Oh, yeah.
That one's in there too. So,
although that always felt like Toronto just looking, rummaging through their garage.
Yeah.
And finding a bag of shit and then being handing the shit over and saying, can we have your dude? And then someone got drunk and said, sure, take it.
Calgary took it. Yeah, for sure. So.
The headache for headache trade is always a good one too. I think like the last one of any particular note was Montreal Dallas with, things weren't working out with Ribeiro in Montreal. Things were not working out with Yanni Nienema in Dallas. And I think both general managers got together and said, you know, I'll take your headache if you take my headache. Maybe the change of scenery will help both players. It didn't really help Nienema, but it clearly did help Mike Ribeiro. What's the one or two trades that come to mind where you say to yourself, you know what, this is the trade that this player completely needed in order to actualize as a legitimate NHLer/superstar?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Legitimate superstar.
I mean, it may have been that Vancouver deal you mentioned with Cam Neely, because he wasn't going to be that guy in Vancouver.
Or superstar, I guess. Well, if you go back to the 90s, where Scotty Bowman makes those trades, like to get the Red Wings over to the Stanley Cup. So I mean, you got he goes and gets Brendan Shanahan, and then later Igor Larionov and Slava Fetisov in those separate deals. And I mean, up until that point in the early 90s to mid 90s, I mean, the Red Wings were like, you know, they were the poster team for, like, I mean, playoff choking, for lack of a better phrase. They lose to Borshevsky and Elise in 93, to Jamie Baker and the Sharks in 94. And then, so, I mean, Shanahan was already an established star, and then, you know, Fetisov and Larionov, like, I mean, had obviously that, those great international careers, but, you know, for Scotty Bowman to be able to, like, get those players up and then just gel that team, that cohesive five-man unit, and then plus Shanahan's grit in complimenting guys like Steve Yzerman over the top and finally overcome that player, that hurdle. So, they were already established stars, but I think in Scotty's mastermind in molding and gelling that team to back-to-back championships in 97 and 98, I think is that's good on him.
Last one for me, and thanks for joining us. Is there any kind of big picture overarching thread that can be drawn through these trades? I mean, is every trade its own animal, or is there a pattern of behavior, let's say, by general managers that result in some of these trades kind of being similar in their aim or in the results?
I think the underlying thread is, like, I mean, every general manager just wants to make his team better, and it's you play in a league. I mean, you obviously want your team to win, but, you know, you can't play in a league without complimenting somehow everybody else. You have to have an opponent, a legitimate opponent to play with. So you don't have to be friends or anything, but trades. I think, in my opinion, the best trades are the ones that help both teams. And I loved writing the one for ones where you get like Pronger for Shanahan or Neuendijk for Ginland, just all star for all star. And I think the theme is just you make the teams better, and sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But it's just a headache example that you just use. It's just trying to make your team better, such that it's better just for your team, but just for the league and the game as a whole. You're still trying to kick the crap out of each other, obviously, but for the game as a whole, I think every GM just wants to make their team better.
And Rob, last one here, and we thank you for your time. And it's an excellent book, The Best, Worst, and Biggest NHL Trades of All Time. Are you surprised that in the history of the NHL there's only been one coach traded, Michel Bergeron from Quebec to the Rangers?
I am, actually, and I don't know how you can work that into the next CBA, but thanks, Jeff. I forgot about that one, but it's a shock. I don't know how you incorporate non-players into a particular collective bargaining agreement, but it's in the league's 100-plus year history, that is a surprise.
Yeah, for a first-round pick and like $100,000 cash, it's still a head-scratcher, although he had quite clearly fallen out of favor with the Nordiques management, and then he got to meet and work for Phil Esposito, so I'm sure that was a lot of fun. Rob, thanks so much for this.
Hey.
The book is excellent. Yes,
yeah, Rob,
Greg.
Rob, where can people get this book?
Well, you can go to chapters.indigo.ca and just search for Biggest NHL Trades. And otherwise, you can also tweet me at TMLFansRob. I'll provide you all the information. But Indigo is your best bet. And if you have any questions, just, again, tweet me at TMLFansRob, and I'll help you out.
That's awesome. Great stuff, Rob. We'll catch up down the line, bud.
Thanks, everybody.
Rob Del Mundo, The Best, Worst, and Biggest NHL Trades of All Time.
Phil Coker and Eric Bayer both make the point, and it's a good one, that not the Heatley trade and not the Thornton trade, but the last blockbuster trade in this era was the Rick Nash for Dubinsky, Erickson, Anisimov, and a first.
Thought Thornton was a bigger trade than that.
Well, maybe you know this, but you don't, because I don't recall seeing it back then. Was there a market for him? Like, was there a derby for Thornton? Or was that just the trade they cut?
That's an interesting question, because there were a lot of general managers when he did get traded that didn't know that he was on the block. And I asked I asked Mike Keenan about this, and he said the first trade that they had worked out for Thornton was Luongo for Thornton. That was it.
Right.
Yeah. The Alan Cohen, the owner of the Florida Panthers, didn't want to take salary back. They just wanted to dump Luongo's salary because they were done paying that much and they were cutting back on their budget. But that was the first one. So Connell and Keenan had that deal worked out. It was going to be one for one. And, man, would that have – can you imagine? Think of how the NHL changes if that trade happens. Roberto Luongo is a netminder for the Boston Bruins.
Right. And then Canucks win the cup because Luongo flakes out. Tim Thomas and the Vancouver Canucks win the cup because Thomas can win in Boston.
Oh, that's hilarious. Oh, by the way, we should mention as well, you know that the pro wrestling intro that we had?
Yeah.
That's a Mark Cole special.
Before we get to going postal, you wanted to mention something about Dion Phaneuf.
You know, okay, there was some, and again, I wasn't on the podcast yesterday outside of the 10, 15 minutes that I did. Something interesting happened on Monday. Blowout game, the Columbus Blue Jackets, who have now outscored the Maple Leafs in two games to the tune of 11-2.
Jesus.
So it's like, I know, tilted rink.
It was so bad that Rogers had to pay $4.9 billion to get us to stop talking about it.
Hey, can someone tell Randy Carlyle that timeouts are a thing in the NHL and you're allowed to use them? not just the Boston series. I guess it was the Columbus game as well. Someone remind Randy that timeouts exist. Man, he left Reimer in there too. Okay, so late in the third, it's a blow. I think at this point it's either 5-6. And Dion Phaneuf steps up and in a beautiful, like a gorgeous body check, shoulder to shoulder / shoulder to chest, destroys Artem Anisimov. Who goes off, you know, holding his shoulder, clearly in some distress. He said afterwards he was fine. He also made the good point too, and I love when players do this. He said, no, it was a clean hit. Nope, that hit was fine. I should have my head down in that spot. But it got me to thinking about the code. And when we think of things like the code, we think is, oh, it's only amongst fighters. And the fighters have this, you know, silly sort of ritual and this code. And here's where you're allowed to fight and here's where you're not allowed to fight. And there's a certain, you know, code that goes along with, you know, having that line of employment in the NHL. Remember when Chris Osgood was on and, in, you know, just one of our sort of throwaway comments, I think you said it, Wisha, you're one of the only goaltenders ever to take a Shea Weber shot in the head.
Yeah.
And remember what Osgood's reaction was? He said, yeah, that was against the code. That was stupid. It was a blowout game at that point. He didn't have to waste one high because the unwritten code is there are some things you just don't do in a blowout game. And it's not just big celebrations on, you know, goals that make it 7-1. Like, there is that code for goaltenders that you don't waste shots high when it's a blowout game. You don't go headhunting when it's a blowout game. And one of the things also that sort of riles up players is, you know, if you're Dion Phaneuf, the code says you can make that hit in the first period, but you don't make that hit in a blowout game. Because at that point, you know, players just want to get the game over with, make sure nobody gets hurt. The outcome is not in question. And part of the quote unquote code at that moment is you don't make that hit because it's not going to affect the game at all.
That's a good point. Before we do going postal, you want to talk to my dad for like 3 minutes?
Yeah, all right. I do.
Hang on here. I'm going to hand over the headphones to my dad.
Okay. This is awesome. It's the first.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Hello, Mr. Wyszynski. How are you today, sir?
Not bad. Just want to first, to those that will be celebrating tomorrow, happy Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Myself, I'm thankful for a wonderful wife of 40 years and a wonderful family.
So, oh, look at you, the baby face moment already. That's right,
course.
Shine it up. That's fantastic. Now, I think a lot of people are, because, you know, much in the way that, you know, you can't bite your own teeth, a fire can't set itself aflame, it's hard to put into perspective who you are as a person. And a lot of people want to know who Greg Wyszynski is, and more importantly, Mr. Wyszynski, who Greg Wyszynski was. Can you tell us a little bit about a young Greg Wyszynski?
Well, young Greg Wyshynski was adventurous, had a great imagination. He got very good on his Atari games when we started off with Pong. And got to be a big Star Wars fan and fortunately got him into the sports world by becoming an athletic supporter like myself. not exactly a participant.
What was the on-ramp to your son finding the game of hockey?
Oh, by just following Dad's lead, watching the games, and taking to him a couple when I can. And, of course, the ultimate crown was getting second prize in a Jersey Lotto in 95 and being able to board two ticket broker tickets to game four of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
That's awesome.
We swept the Red Wings, sorry to say.
Yeah, and that was the year that the Red Wings actually were going through teams like a hot knife into butter, and that was supposed to be a salted rink, and Detroit was supposed to sweep the New Jersey Devils. I believe a lot of people were calling that series, it was the Detroit Red Wings were going to win the Stanley Cup that year in three games. That game four would
seeming
be unnecessary.
Like it, yeah.
Yeah, if you remember that Detroit Red Wings squad. Now, you were an Islanders fan growing up, or when the Islanders were around, right?
I followed the Rangers till they started disassembling the team and got rid of Tkachuk and Stemkowski, my linesman there, and then followed the Islanders before they won their four cups in a row. And then joined my son when the Islanders started breaking up their team and supporting the home state team of the Devils before they were good also.
So
right? we suffered the slings and arrows.
The Mickey Mouse years.
Yes, the Mickey Mouse years, that's right.
Yes,
now,
of course.
Curious about that Rangers squad that you watch. I mean, was this like the Emil Francis era New York Rangers
yes,
team, like Harry Howell and that lot, because that was a pretty exciting team. And a little later
than that, up into the gag line with Zubair and Rattel and Brad Park and that whole crew there. But like I said, when they started dismantling them, went out and followed the Islanders because they were the interesting story in town, the Cinderella story, as it turned out after a while.
And for those that may not be familiar, the reference to gag line, that stands for goal a game, which is what they're called. So everybody get your mind out of the gutter. do you remember, were you there? Did you watch it on TV the night that Eddie Jockeman came back? I mean, it was like a day after they let him go and he ended up at Detroit Red Wing. But were you there then?
Probably. I don't recall specifically that I might have watched that game and enjoyed his return to the Garden and the reception that he got.
It's one of the great, and it's one of the great pictures in the history of hockey. I mean, we look at, you know, great moments of Bobby Orr, his goal to win the Stanley Cup for the Boston Bruins, Bill Barilko's goal in 1951 behind Jerry McNeil of the Montreal Canadiens. But one of my favorite pictures is Eddie Jockeman in the Detroit Red Wings uniform, standing there in the Detroit crease just after the anthem, and he's getting the standing ovation, or maybe before the anthem, and he's getting a standing ovation from everyone at MSG. It's one of the most wonderful sports pictures, folks, anyone can have. Do a Google Images search on it and have a peek at what we're talking about. You know, Mr. Wyshynski, I've long lobbied for the General Manager of the Year Award to be named the Bill Torrey Award, because here's a guy, unlike, you know, Sam Pollock, all due respect, I mean, people say that it should be the Sam Pollock Award, but you can talk to this with some authority. I mean, you saw the development, you know, the creation and then the development of the New York Islanders from the sort of, you know, the root to the fruit, which ended up being the Stanley Cup, their four consecutive. Take us through, you know, your memories of watching this, you know, expansion team grow into, expansion team grow into a Stanley Cup champion.
It was enjoyable. It was like the same as watching our ragtag Devils all of a sudden gain notoriety. And they all click with the everyman players that they had with Bobby Nystrom and that whole crew of supporters. And then Gillies, of course, being the master enforcer and protector on the team, and how he hesitantly got into fights when he really didn't want to, but was goaded into him, and then he just took care of business. Of course, Terry O'Reilly knows that fairly well.
Oh, yes, he does. Who was your favorite Islander from that team? And that was a raw bone, tough team. Yes, I know, Greg, I know. Last question. Who was your favorite Islander from that vintage?
I think Clarkie. Clarkie was the everyman and the no-nonsense fellow who just took care of business without being a bully unto himself. And he helped keep that team glued together because nobody would mess with them knowing they'd have to face Clarkie.
Yeah, Jethro was a force. All right, well, nice catching up with you, sir. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. And happy Thanksgiving, sir.
Thank you now. Okay,
Mr. Wyshynski, thank you.
Sorry, did I just get "you never played the game" from my dad, by the way? Did I just hear that? Did I just hear that correctly?
Yeah, he did. Can I do a hockey history podcast with your dad?
With my dad?
Yeah.
Well, you mean a New York that's hockey awesome. History podcast?
Yeah, man, that's cool. I'm down with that. We talk about Harry Howell and Emil Francis. We made a nice little reference to the gag line as well. That was pretty hip. I like that.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
That's cool, man.
All right, it's time for dad. That's my dad, Robert Wyszynski, ladies and gentlemen, the man who got me into puck that's and Mr. pro wrestling Wyszynski. And beer yeah. and whiskey.
Cigars?
No, he was a cigarette smoker, man. Demonized. Okay. I demonized him for that. Cigars is my own thing. When I used to. He's not here anymore. When I used to sneak them in my room when I was like 15 and smoke them out of the window, like
cigars at 15. But like Colts, like wine tip cigars, right?
Those joints you get from 7-Eleven, you know, like with the hole already punched in the back, you know. What I'm talking about.
I know that.
All right, everybody, it's time for a Wednesday favorite.
Do you want to do a mailbag segment every week?
It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyszynski. Whoa, not that deep.
We are nutting up for each other here.
Now's your chance to ask Merrick and Wyszynski anything, and we mean anything.
You got your thinking, Took?
Vegan cooking tips. Favorite Doctor Who characters. What's the best bar in Stouffville? Is there a bar in Stouffville? The meaning of life. Wait, let's not get carried away with that.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog at yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyszynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyszynski.
I don't know if I've mentioned it, but when I do the show from Jersey, I am doing the show from my parents' basement. Like, it is a wood-paneled parents' basement. And if you look at the wall on the other side from where I am, you see three things. You see a New Jersey Devils 95 cup poster that I think was handed out at the banner raising. You see a framed copy of the New York Daily News declaring that World War II is over. And then you see a Daily News cartoon. It's a really great cartoon. It's a caricature of all the Islanders of the dynasty years around a gigantic number 4 in a Stanley Cup that he has framed on the wall, too. So
tweet a picture of it.
Maybe I'll take an entire video of this very basement and show you.
Why don't you
tour.
Just do that? Why don't you just throw? Yeah, I want you just. Why just find that sucker?
Why don't you just tell me what the movie you're looking for is? Marshall Beckett writes in. What is your all-time favorite non-hockey sports moment or game? I'll answer that to give Merrick a moment. Without question, it is as a Mets fan, the 1986 Game 6. I know it's a bit of a cliche answer, but the ball rolling through Buckner's legs. The improbable comeback, and then of course the just the coda was Game 7. I mean, they won the series in Game 6. That, without question, the single most eventful sporting event that I can recall watching outside of hockey. And also, I got a lot of Yankee fan friends. I know it's a Yankee town. It'll always be a Yankee town. When the Mets win, that's just magical. It's more magical. It means more. Yankees win. Another ring. Mets win. It's like a fable's been written.
I don't think what mine would be. UFC 40 was a special one for me. That's when the UFC really sort of turned a corner. But
what was that? What would was have the, been, the main event of that one?
That was Ken Shamrock, Tito Ortiz. Oh. And I was sitting front row. And I remember the first time I heard this. A fist hitting a jaw. And the other guy just shaking it off. I thought, oh man, this is deep water. These guys are playing for keeps. But I think the biggest one for me would have been 1985. I was working for Versa Foods at Exhibition Stadium, selling hot dogs and jumbo Cokes for the Toronto Blue Jays. And on one night, I think it was against Texas Rangers, there was a big brawl. Bruce Keeson just threw at George Bell. Bell charged a mound, drop kicked him, got kicked out of the game, loaded up the bases, and Ernie Witts, hero, Blue Jay hero.
Oh, man,
A Grand Slam home run, and then essentially just trotted the bases and chirped at Bruce Keeson all the way around for throwing it at George Bell. It was a great moment in Blue Jays history, and that's probably. Although, I mean, the back-to-back World Series were pretty sweet, especially off the Joe Carter home run off of Williams. Yeah, that might have been it. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, the World Series win against the Phillies. That'd be
because he was so nice to create the intro. Mark Cole gets a question in. Merrick, do you still have your Hockey Night in Canada blazer?
in case you need it again.
I never got one. I always wanted one. You know who's got one?
Oh,
I know. I never got the baby blue blazer.
That's like winning the Masters and not getting the jacket. How did that happen?
Sucks. I don't know. I don't know anyone that, well, you know who has one is, and he wears it out. Like he wears it like out, like going out to dinner or out to a bar or wears it to like our pickup games or our men's league games is our good buddy and friend of the podcast, Dave Bedini. Bedini's got one of the old powder blue, baby blue Hockey Night in Canada jackets. He does, but not me.
That's a shame, man.
It's true.
Well, there's always next time. This is from this is from Mike Sourin. Hey, Greg and Jeff. Had a question about one of the rules changes this year, the jersey tuck rule. Whatever happened to it? Has it been called in the regular season, all that? That either of you have noticed it, or has it just been kind of ignored? Just noticed when I was at the Oilers Blackhawks game the other night, a few jerseys half tucked in, but honestly wasn't looking. I've not seen it called. I'm wondering if it was one of those things where they called a few early in the season to try to affect change, and then it's like, who gives a shit afterwards? You know?
You know what I'm glad about? That we don't hear players or coaches whining about it to referees on the bench. He's got his jersey tucked in. Right. You know, you'll whine about a high stick. I'm just glad that hasn't happened yet. Let's not get to that place.
Yeah,
in the
because
NHL.
You know that's what it's like. It's like coach will be like, he's got his jersey tucked in. Looks down, his player has jersey tucked in. It's, you know how it is. Mike also says random penguin chili willy, which is one we've never gotten before and is quite
amazing. Nice. Yeah.
Jeff Carlton, what's your guys' go-to website for hockey info, stats, etc.? You seem to come up with them quick during the show. Have multiple browsers. Google, whatever. Absolutely love the show. Look forward to it every day. Hope Merrick doesn't leave with his newfound riches. Random Penguin, Mario Faubert?
Faubert?
Sure. I go three places. Extra Skater is amazing. Behind the Net's amazing. And then for the quick hitters, and especially the team stats, like goals against, team goals against, and that kind of thing, NHL.com is a treasure trove.
Yep. Yeah, it is. And you're right about Gabe Desjardins' site behind the net as well. Dello, when he gets funky with it, at MC79 Hockey, is another great one. But, you know, as far as, not so much for stats, but as far as, you know, stories and reading, we get this, there's an awesome sports scan service that we subscribe to that sends out, you know, every day they call together all the pieces written about each individual team. And it's all in one document that would get emailed to us every day. So that's my my morning cup of coffee. Usually after a run, I'll sit down there and read all the stories that day about Puck. So it's a subscription service. Uh-oh. Wish is gone. We just got on our Google chat. Crap, lost you. Greg is typing. This is exciting. Let's do live play-by-play of Greg Wyshynski trying to get back on the podcast. Hey, Maddie, what does this mean? I think someone is using 36. No, should be fine, Greg. Hang on. Should be fine, Greg. Try again. Let's see if I have any of these. A lot of these just get emailed to Wish. Nice comment from Karen Douglas. MVSW featuring Wyshynski's dad talking history with Jeff Merrick. That was great. Well, thank you, Karen Douglas. I would much rather, truth be told, talk to Greg's dad than talk to Greg. Greg can get a little annoying after a while. Any more thoughts? This is from Polymath Penny. Any more thoughts on having Wish as Esposito reading Thunder and Lightning clips on the podcast, please? We got to start writing these ideas down or just remembering them. Maddie, can you write that one down? That's an awesome idea for us to do somewhere down the road. One of those dog day. You know what? That sounds like a summer special. That's like July and August, which we will actually do the podcast this year in July and August. That sounds like it could be a nice little sidebar for the program. Maybe once a week, maybe a couple times a week. Oh, getting Mr. Wyshynski or Greg? I want Mr. Wyshynski. I don't want Greg. No, getting Wish to do as Phil Esposito reading passages from Thunder and Lightning, the Phil Esposito book. That's probably one for the summer, eh, Maddie? That's probably good for the summer. Yeah. Brendan Moore tweets in, obviously, when I was talking to Greg's dad, Bob. This guy on MVSW signs exactly like my doctor. It's making me feel uncomfortable. Oh, that's funny. What else do we have here? Oh, all right, so Wish is done. He ain't coming back. He's gone. He ain't come back to the podcast today. He ain't come back to the podcast till Monday. You want to know why? I'll tell you why. Because tomorrow and Friday, there will be no MVSW podcast. It's true. Thanksgiving time. Greg is going to get stuffed. Greg is going to get fat. Greg is going to get drunk. Me, I'll be working. And we don't have U.S. Thanksgiving in Canada. We have our own Thanksgiving. Thank you very much. And we've already had it. And with that, we'll close out today's podcast of love. Let me see. Who would I like to thank today? I would like to thank Gary Bettman and the NHL, Keith Pelley and Scott Moore and Nadir Muhammad at Rogers, and the $5.2 billion that slid from one side to the other. Thank you for that, and hopefully I'll be gainfully employed for the full duration of that contract, that 12-year package between Rogers and the NHL. Thanks to Rob Del Mundo, author, co-author, along with Andrew Podniks, of the best, worst, and biggest NHL trades of all time. Find that online, or you can always tweet Rob for the information, at TMLFansRob is his Twitter handle. Thanks to Bob Wyshynski for classing up the program, for classing up the joint. This podcast has been too sloppy, too slack for quite some time now, going on, well, 3 years that we've done the podcast. Thank you to Bob for classing it up a little bit and making it listenable and bringing some class to it. Make it a little more distinguished, a little more polished. Enough of me and Sloppy Greg. And thanks to... Who else should I thank for today, Maddie? I want to thank my dog, Deacon. He's been sitting beside me the whole time. Yes, Deacon, we're going for a walk now. That's my husky, ladies and gentlemen. Well, on behalf of your vanished host, Greg Wyshynski, I'm Jeff Merrick with the night off, so I will not be on Sportsnet this evening. Just watching hockey games. 13 of them, eh? 13 hockey games tonight. Yeah, it's going to be a pretty big one. 13 games. Only one yesterday, Dallas and Anaheim. That's weird for a Tuesday. But 13. Vinny returns to Tampa tonight. I know, it's very exciting. Probably get a nice warm welcome from the Tampa Bay Lightning fans. All right, thanks for joining us today. Again, no podcast Thursday, Friday. Back on Monday for more MVSW. Have a lovely weekend to our neighbors to the south. Have a great Thanksgiving. Be safe. If you're drinking, hide the keys. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday.